Hey, everybody. Welcome back to School Sucks. Today's February 11th, 2013. Coming up on the program, my discussion with Adam Kokash. He actually joined us for the first half hour of our live show last Thursday. This is the audio to a video, School Sucks TV, number 6 on YouTube. One of the things I really like about Mr. Kokash is his optimism. He really loves to talk about the technological revolution, what the future holds, positive things about the future, and that is pretty much the majority of our conversation. But Adam does these very provocative, often volatile street interviews, and that was where our discussion began. I wanted to talk a little bit more, as I've been trying to do on the show for many, many months now, more peaceful and effective ways of communicating with other people, especially when those other people are hostile. Not because they're naturally hostile or stupid, but just because they are in an environment, the political environment, that makes them hostile. So we really didn't, Adam was really limited on time, and we didn't really get into the depth that I wanted to, but I still found this to be a fun and interesting conversation, so I thought I would share it with you. Again, audio from a video, so this is actually the audio from the Ustream recording. I hope it's okay. It sounded okay to me. And that's it. So our Sudbury shows should be coming up within the next couple of days. There's going to be a two-parter on the Sudbury School, and I have a very exciting announcement about the 2013 New Hampshire Liberty Forum. But I can't tell you yet, so stay tuned. All right, here's that show.
I just finished public school. I'll tell you why it's great. Waking up at 6 a.m. to pledge allegiance to the state. Yeah, it's true. I got my public school blues. My teacher likes to yell.
All right, so Adam Kokash of Adam versus the Man in Herndon, Virginia. Thank you so much for joining us. Good to talk to you again. It's been a while. Wanted to start tonight with, I'll set the scene for you, little anti-gun rally, supposedly anti-gun rally. I'm going to pull up the video of this real quick, if you'll bear with me. And after it wraps up, this guy shows up.
Right, so we all have a job to do, right?
I feel convinced.
Around gun control. Let's everybody hold up your signs one last time so we can see the sea of people here. Thank you all so much. Thank you to all of our speakers, and thank you to each one of you. Thank you.
Nobody is for gun control. What you are really advocating is that a small group of people called government have guns and get to point them at other people to take their guns away.
Wow.
Does anybody have an answer to that? How? How?
Yes,
how will you take my guns away?
Yes, we will.
Okay, how?
Okay, so does the chanting, did that win you over or no?
Yeah, I'm all about grabbing the guns now. I want to be crazy. I want to be looked at like an idiot everywhere I go. I want to have no credibility whatsoever or sense of reason or logic or any kind of self-respect or anything like that. No, totally. I just want to join the mob of angry moms at this point. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So let's start with a challenging question, Adam. What is the point of doing this? Because I've watched your channel for a while, right? All the way back to the days where you were trying to embed yourself in the Occupy movement down there, certainly with mixed results. And I know you're an optimistic guy. I know enough of your YouTube videos and your podcast to know that you are like a real optimist. But there you are. You're in the belly of the beast and you're surrounding yourself with these kinds of people. So I do want to ask you about how you maintain that optimism. But first of all, why do you make these videos? Why do you go down there and torture yourself like this?
Well, you know, I don't know if I would ever put it in those terms because I really have fun doing what I do. Some people call it, you know, real life trolling, but I why, you know, at this point, I wish I could, I kind of want to just respond with something abstract and noble and be like, do you ask a fish why it swims? But You know, I that's that would be kind of facetious. I don't know, man. You know, I really enjoy being able to go out and engage, and it's not always about making people look stupid, but maybe it just that's what I happen to be the best at, you know. And I do serious interviews too. I talk to smart people, you know. I get those out. They don't seem to get as many views usually, but you know, that video only got to 25,000, which is not insignificant, but you know, I really thought that was going to do a lot better, and it's still getting around, which is nice to see. But yeah, that particular event of going to the 1 million moms for gun control march, and for the title it was ABTM Punks 1 million in quotes moms for gun control,
right, quote.
As you know, and I've got that argument from Molyneux, and I think it's really powerful. But the sign I had said, you know, I'm a gun owner, let's talk. And, you know, on the other, how will you take my guns? And it was, you know, I think that's the crux of the debate. You know, that's the serious question. And, you know, when I see people, it's you know what, I guess it's really like, it's the same. I'm just a troll at heart. Maybe that's it. Like, you know, the same thing I understand that motivates people to like respond to comments when they should be going to bed late at night, and it'd be like reading every single comment on their Facebook page. And I remember there's reading some comic or maybe it was from South Park where Stan's, his dad is going, but I can't go to bed. Someone on the internet is wrong.
Right.
You know, like, you know, I have, you know, and it's for me, it's like seeing that in real life. Like there are, you know, and I guess there's a certain passion that I have for connecting with people this way, because I have a belief that government is not just this independent violent gang of thugs that is like, you know, a leech from society that is apart from it. And I get that. And I understand how that model applies. But at the same time, it's very much a product of the paradigm.
Yeah. Like the man is not one guy, you know, like that's something that's in the minds of all of these people. And it's really ubiquitous, and it's really pervasive.
It's exactly what I say. I say that there's a little bit of the man in every one of us.
But let me throw this word out as far as the motivation behind these videos and tell me what you think. For a long time, I used the word props in trying to. Now, I'm trying to get away from this kind of thinking and trying to get away from the idea of shaming people. But like in my family, let's say, like there's somebody who would be like a real liberal and somebody would be like a real conservative. And I've got two brothers, you know, a couple years younger than me, who are kind of on the fence about a lot of this stuff. So I'll gather up the older, you know, uncle who's a liberal and the other guy who's a conservative. And I'll say, brothers, gather around. Here are the two mainstream, you know, viewpoints that are within the safe range of thinking in politics in this country. Let's see how it stands up to questioning, you know.
Yeah, you have to put safe in quotes there too.
Yeah, absolutely, because it's very, very unsafe. But do you feel like that is part, like the outreach is not for the people that you're directly talking to?
Yes, and I've said that before. And maybe it's just because it's a particular technique that I've been able to develop for myself, that this is what I do. But it's like, if I go out and I'm trying to make someone look stupid, and there are times when like that's what I'm doing, and I can do it. The thing is, I can do it to anybody. I can say, "What's your name? Where are you from? Why are you here?" And I can dig in the why, and you know, well, at most events, you know, and find some logical fallacy. Like it's really not hard. But when it's obvious and it's easy, and you go in with that intent specifically, it's they are not the target audience. And sometimes people say, Adam, that person, you didn't convince them of anything. Like, what's the point? Like, well, the point's not them. It's for the person watching this who you might share this with, who would, you know, who's thinking, you know, or who you want to say, don't be that guy. You know, why is everybody putting these ridiculous comments on? What did you learn? Like, and you're right to use them. Sometimes props, you know, it's so funny that you say that, because I never use that term until, or even had it enter my head, and I didn't even use it. But just yesterday, day before yesterday, it was the day after the Justice Department white paper was leaked from NBC about U.S. citizens being denied Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights by drone strike.
Yep.
that we went out to talk to people about that in front of the White House, and we were talking to cops. And I was thinking in my head, like, I'm going to go up to him and I'm going to say, you know, sir, how do you feel about being filmed by independent journalists and citizens who want to hold police accountable? And I didn't even get that far. He was like, he interrupted in it. But I was going to say, well, if he said, well, since I do have the right to film this, I'm just going to stand here and use you as a prop. So here we go. How do you feel? And you know, just stand there and stick the mic in their face while they don't say anything, just to show how, you know, how bad cops can be about that. And I'm sure there are cops that would do that. And there are some cops that, you know, I respect cops that are saying, like, you know, hey, I prefer you don't film, or, you know, like, I, you know, but a friendly cop who's there to serve the public doesn't even say, please don't film me. You know, they say, you know, hey, well, you know, I can't really answer questions like that, but they'll be friendly and polite with you and, like, interact like a normal human being. But there's something about the wall between law enforcement and this. Anyways, I don't want to digress too much, but it was at least in that incident where the word, like, in thinking about actually talking to a cop, if they were going to be one of those, you know, asshole cops,
mm-hmm.
as opposed, because there are good cops, you know, there are well-intentioned cops that welcome accountability at least. But the majority don't. And in that sense, you know, if it was like I was going to call him out for it by using him as a prop and actually use that word. But yeah, the point is, oftentimes the message is not directed at the person in the video. It's at the person watching, and it's don't be that guy.
I was talking to somebody recently about just the philosophy of liberty in general. And I think the objectivist philosophy preceded it as the ultimate shaming tool. If you want to use it that way, do you know what I mean? Like, when you point out the non-aggression principle, the property rights, very clearly, a rational person would have a difficult time walking away from that conversation, not feeling ashamed on their own. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I think we need to be in actual individual outreach. I think we really need to be careful about that approach. If you're making someone feel guilty, I really prefer... And maybe this comes through more in my podcast than my Man on the Street videos, but the attitude of, as libertarians, hey, we figured something out. And if you just stop doing it this way, like, our lives will all be better. Check it out. Isn't that cool? You know, and, like, be sharing something positive.
Yeah. And that's really what I'm looking for, too. I mean, I'm not saying, like, this is the ultimate shaming tool. Let's get out there and shame. You know, like, I want to do a better job as a communicator. And look, to be fair to Adam, if you've never seen his show and you've just seen, like, a couple clips of these videos that go viral where he's mixing it up with people on the street. And I hope, if you're unfamiliar with Adam versus the Man, you'll go check it out, because you anchor this show pretty much on a nightly basis in a studio. And the last question I'll ask you is, you know, despite, like, where we started, despite where you are immersing yourself in these situations, whether it's Occupy or, you know, the TSA, or talking to the military, being used as police at the inauguration, all this stuff that you're involved in, how do you remain so optimistic, Adam?
That's a great question, because I mean, even on top of that, on top of everything else, for those who know, like, how I work, I've been a stress monster for the last 6 months, you know, moving into this new facility. And, you know, having different people come and go from the operation and trying different things. Like, you know, we tried the newscast, tried to do a 20-minute video broadcast on top of all of this. And just recently then took it down to 5 minutes and then killed it entirely, because it wasn't an efficient use of resources compared to doing, you know, putting the energy into the podcast and doing Man on the Street videos. So, but, you know, I stay optimistic because I have the long view of human history. And that's what always gives me hope when I get stressed out too, is being able to tap that optimism. And it's really a rational conclusion. You know, it's irrational. First of all, it's irrational to not be happy. It's simply irrational to not take control of your own state of mind and live in the headspace that you deliberately want to live your life in. And for me, it has to be a rational conclusion as well, by the same standard of, you know, observation and analysis, looking forward at the future of human history. And when you step back and see how far we've come, you know, and then you see the tragedies of the modern era, like nuclear war or just war in general, and the police state. I mean, all the greatest, you know, things that libertarians would say are the costs of government. But I still see it as a process of two steps forward, one step backwards. And if you understand government to be not something that exists, I mean, remember, there is no such thing as government. You can't, you can't point to this or that building and, or this group of people, but you can kind of say like, well, maybe it's this pattern of behavior by this group of people. This is government. And, you know, in that sense, it's not something that exists as much as something that we do. It's a behavior. And as voters, even, you know, in that sense, voters would be a part of that government structure. And if you understand that that government is coercion, there are two fundamental things about it. It is pathological behavior, and it is detrimental to human happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And if you believe, as I do, that technology is fundamentally empowering people to be more capable, capable of seeing those fundamental facts, capable of, I think we are, you know, despite the horrific blips we see in school shootings, kinds of things like that, we are, I think, you know, and who knows, maybe this is a place where you'd say America is in a step backwards with the sheeple mentality right now. But I think overall, in the general course of human history, we are becoming more self-aware, more capable of providing for our own mental health. And, you know, along with the, you know, one step backwards part, I think American mental health is taking a big step backwards right now. So I don't want to try to, I don't want people to think I'm like denying that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see what we've come from and really what's on the horizon, I'm also very optimistic. I mean, the 3D printing revolution is around the corner. In a couple of decades, we're going to have computers smarter than our brains. We're going to have computers smarter than our brains implanted in our brains. We are going to have devices that read our thoughts. I mean, these are, every time I look forward and think about it and see all this crazy shit, I stop and go, wait a second, there's something in reality that is a current trend that shows this. I mean, look at Domino's Pizza Tracker as a way of thinking we're about to have the taco copters in actual use, you know, drones dropping food out of the sky that's 3D printed at a food tower. You know, maybe it's not like that, but really just around the corner, this kind of empowering technological revolution that we are about to experience in the next like 30 to 50 years of our lifetimes is going to be the equivalent of all technological development prior to this in human history.
Yep.
When we have and like the devices that read our thoughts, those already exist. I'm not like making shit up. There are little things, and they're primitive now, that will read your brain waves and send it to your smartphone. And they're designing apps for things you can do with this, like to measure stress levels and things like that. But what we're going to have, it's really not that far off to think that we're going to be able to, through 3D printing and computer-controlled brains computers controlled by our brains, literally just think shit into existence. You know, when you have a guy who's got a chip in his head that's smarter than you and a 3D printer in his living room, what do you get that guy for Christmas? And until you can answer that question, you have no idea what the economy is going to look like in just 50 years. That's being conservative for when we're going to get to that point. But this is the source of me being a technology enthusiast, is the way that it's fundamentally empowering. But like, if you're a rational libertarian, you can kind of add these factors up and go, well, yeah, it's really hard to deny that we're coming to something. And I call it the asymptote, you know, the curve just keeps
the
going.
J curve. Yeah. Yeah.
And you might say, yeah, it never gets vertical, Adam. Don't you know what an asymptote is? But it gets to the point where it's accelerating so fast, you can't even tell.
Yeah, sure. And it is true that, you know, all technological advancement in human history going back 4,000 years, that jump was then replicated from somewhere like 1935 to 1990. And then all of it back to the agricultural revolution has been replicated in the last 20 years. Probably less than that. And yes, that should continue to increase exponentially. Now, first of all, of everything you just said, adding the word taco copter to my vernacular is probably the most exciting for me. But here's the cynical response. Okay, here's the cynical yeah, but to that. Somebody says, yeah, that's great that you're enthusiastic. Oh, go ahead.
I got one more for you.
Sure.
The burrito bomber.
Also,
has already the testing phase, and it is only the FAA that is keeping that from landing in your backyard.
So that's a nice segue to this question, to this, yeah, but all of this technology that we're looking forward to coming down the pipe and all the things that we're already utilizing, state has that stuff first. They get access to it first. So what do you say to that? What still makes us optimistic?
funny you've mentioned that, because someone actually Skyped into my show just a couple nights ago to ask basically the same question. And we had to go back and examine the historical record. You know, the major empowering technology, you know, the government had the internet first. Mm-hmm. Did it from being a fundamental force for empowerment today? No. Did the government, what other technologies did the government have first? And it's like, sure, there might be some blip there, but if it's the Enlightenment technology, you know, the next wave of, like, one of my fantasies, if you will, when I started thinking this way was, and then we're all going to get therapy robots, you know, they're all going to be smarter than us. And already you have to think, well, what is the therapeutic benefit that we get from the internet? And I have to think, while there is the potential that you know, you see that if the government has these technologies first, the only consequence of that really is a slight delay in the process. That's all it is. And here's, in a way, it makes me hopeful, because if they get the Enlightenment technology first, if they go, wow, you know, we really are better off if we, you know, don't bomb people, if we don't hurt each other, if we work together, everybody's better off, I'm better off. You know, mm-hmm. if they really get to that by sheer technological mass and computing power to a way that they can't deny it, then, you know, I think that's a good thing that they get it first. But this goes back to, like, my favorite argument, and it's in that video that you started this interview with about the gun control debate, where I was being interviewed right after bullhorning from the middle of that crowd. And I said to the reporter, you know, the only reason you're alive right now is because 30 seconds ago, I decided not to kill you because I love you. Mm-hmm. And that idea that we are all alive on this planet because we want each other to be alive is often missed and overlooked. And people really seem to take it for granted just how fragile life is. And Or tend to, you know, not give adequate weight to the fact that human life is as fragile as it is, and that it's so very easy to kill another human being, but that we have come to the point already where we have greatly asserted at least the value of human life in a way that, you know, only people like the president get away with killing people for no good reason.
Yeah, and I you know, back to the whole question of why is it okay that we have these things too, or that, you know, the state gets them first, is I think one of the reasons why we've seen what we've seen with, you know, the internet, let's say, is that one thing that is really on our side is creativity. You know, despite what happens to most people throughout most of their childhood, where a lot of that stuff is being crushed, the U.S. Department of Defense, even with the help of the best, scientists at MIT, didn't really manage to do anything incredibly creative with that technology in 15 or 20 years. But the next 15 or 20 years were absolutely amazing. And another thing I think that people like us can, if we choose, operate without is fear. And I really don't think that those people in that position have that option. I think most people on the state side of things are absolutely terrified. A tiny little group of people trying to control the world. And, you know, I think fear is something that we can certainly move beyond. And that's one of the things that makes me optimistic about it, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I know you've got to go because you've got to get ready to do your show. What time does that start?
9 p.m. Eastern, 5 nights a week, soon to be 7.
What are you guys talking about tonight?
Well, we've got the LAPD rampage. I don't even know where to start with that story. It's such a cluster with a rogue police officer who was trying to get some justice through internal affairs and ended up, I don't even want to try to characterize it. It's such a crazy story. But now a bunch of people have been shot as a result of this manhunt that they've got for him. Then we've got some awesome guests coming on tonight. We are really excited. We've got Phil Labonte, who is part of a band that our producer Mike is really excited about. And we've had a lot more musical artists on the show lately. And like yesterday, we had Byron Davis from God Forbid, and talking about, like, he writes these great libertarian lyrics, and no one ever talks to him about it. So he was really excited about it. I'm debating a liberal blogger, or a liberal, YouTuber,
who's a part of the Young Turks Network, David Packman at 10:30. And then 11 o'clock, we got Tom Woods joining us. So it's a pretty exciting show tonight.
You know, one of the reasons why I have you on, this the last two guests I had, both high school students, Sam and Teen Take, what's his name, Drew? And they both credited you as an influence. So I wanted to check back in with you and see what you were doing. And it looks like some pretty good work.
That's the best part of doing the show. We've got it's because when we were doing voice calls for a while, and I couldn't tell, like, you know, unless people told me, and like Sam Scalin, you mentioned, she had called into the show a couple times and identified herself as a high school student. And I've had a 12-year-old as a correspondent from Florida, Dylan Hanlon, we got some videos from him up on the YouTube channel. And, but really, I want to say at least half of the people that have called in by Skype are high school and younger. And to me, that's, you know, when I turned 18, I just thought, you know, I'm crossing some bullshit barrier and I'm not going to forget about the people on the other side. And I didn't know what form that was going to take, but I'm like, and who knows, maybe I forgot about it. But I promised myself I'd never forget about that situation. I would never look at kids the way that adults looked at me, as, oh, well, I'm over 18. They're not. Forget about them. Like, they're under the purview of their parents and the government until then. Like, I'm never going to do that. And I guess as a factor of living up to that now with what we're doing with Adam versus the Man, a lot of young people are involved with the show. A lot of military guys also, a lot of veterans, but we had an active duty soldier call in from Hawaii the other night talking about, you know, the subversive outreach that he's doing. It's really great to have, even with as small of an audience as we have now, to see that already, you know, and you know this too, how motivating this is. Every piece of fan mail you get, every little encouragement, everybody who leaves a positive comment, you know, it really motivates you, but especially the ones when I know for your podcast, you know, you really get out a lot of information. We need to have you on the show soon here. Again, I know we haven't had you on since it was a television show.
Right.
We really need to we really appreciate the kind of feedback where people say, you know, this is something that changed my life. And I know you get a lot of that. And it's cool to see that even at the scale that we're operating at, you know, we see an incredible amount of that too, and it's really motivating. And that's what makes me optimistic. You know, the kids that went to high school and middle school with smartphones in their pockets and were calling bullshit from the beginning.
Absolutely. You
know, yeah, it's a new awareness that's coming.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. I'll touch base with you soon, and we will set that up. I would love to join you guys one night. When are you debating this David Packman? Because I've been trying to track him down for 3 months. At least tell him I said hi.
Wow. All right. We got him coming on at 10:30 tonight.
Oh, I'm definitely going to watch. Give us your site and the YouTube channel one more time, Adam.
AdamVersusTheMan.com. You can get to everything through there. That's all you got to remember. AdamVersusTheMan.com.
All right. Excellent. So thank you so much for your time, and we will talk again soon.
My pleasure. I'm really excited to share this interview as well, because not a lot of people have, a lot of people have pointed out, you know, what I do with the field videos and the approach to that. But I really want people to see how easy it is to get out and talk to people from the libertarian perspective, from even if you're not a libertarian, using the Socratic dialogue. You know, that's a big part of it. And I'm glad that someone has got this out and really showed some desire to understand that. I'd love to it's not like I have a monopoly on this or anything like that, but for whatever unique techniques that I've developed or that people have seen me deploy, you know, none of them are pioneering by any stretch, but just, I would love to have more competition. You know, I want to share more of these videos. I want to see this developed into a whole genre, you know, a way of talking to people from the libertarian movement. I think it's a lot of fun, and it's pretty effective.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know we were pressed for time tonight. I wanted to get way into this stuff, which we didn't get to do, but maybe we can eventually. So we'll let you go. Thanks again, and keep up the good work.
Thanks so much, Brett.
All right, take care. All right, guys.
It's a great interview, Brett.
Good times.
Was that a good interview?
Yeah, you definitely dominated it with an interview.
Dominated it?
Yeah, what the show.
The show.
Yes, the interview.
This is my show.
Yeah, you did a great job. Yeah.
And
I was bummed that you didn't ask him about how we would also be able to acquire a harem of hot young interns like he does.
That would have been a good question to ask him. Mm-hmm. Is it called a harem?
I don't know. That was just the word that popped into my mind. It just seems like there's always a different one.
Sure.
So
we need interns. We do need interns. Yes. We also need more monitors.
Yes.
Well,
maybe every intern could bring a monitor.
Wow. That's great.
Bye, Johnny.